Well, anyway, let's not spend your valuable time talking about vaccines. Sure. Now, if there was a vaccine against the ills of the ELT industry, is it called TPLT or not? I'm interested to get your overall impressions. I know, Carol, you've not necessarily done everything in the course, but I hope you've managed to get a flavour at least of what's going on.
I got all the way up to materials. So
okay.
And then I still have to do that.
And I want to share your
output
task as well, because it's very interesting. Sorry, Sebastian.
My output task? I've just got to do the assessment output one, which I hope to do by the 16th. Just doing getting through the materials, and then I had a couple of seminars. I just finished the Dogme course with Scott Murray. That was Sundays. That was interesting. It pretty much confirmed a lot of things I read. I had a one-on-one with him.
With who, sorry?
That was interesting. With Scott.
Ah.
Stormberry.
Okay. You did that too. Is this the IDTI Pro?
Yeah, I did that. It was on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of consolidation, reading Teacher Unplugged. It was good, and we were able to ask him direct questions, and I asked him a lot of questions on corrective feedback, mainly. This is my biggest issue in how to help students or learners to become more accurate without being so explicit in teaching them grammar rules and so forth. And then what I came about after doing this course and Dogme and many other courses, there is no magic bullet really to help people. I mean, I think whether people think it's the lexical approach or the direct approach or the TBLT approach or Dogme, I like to think I have used all skills. Some students just, especially here in Russia, they just love rules. They love it. They seem to get off on it, and then they have other people in Spain that really don't like it at all. They prefer the communicative approach and so forth. So I don't care. For me as a teacher, it's good to know as much as I can, a bit of everything. Whether you want to specialize in TBLT or exam preparation or academic writing or whatever niche. I prefer the TBLT mainly because it helps me develop a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are just so many general English teachers nowadays, especially during the pandemic. A lot of people have done these TEFL certificates, and they just flooded the market with online teachers. I think if you want to have a proper salary, you got to get into a niche of focusing on one maybe business area that help with your expertise and charge a higher price. Otherwise you're in the middle of, you know, some platforms have over 20,000 teachers charging $2 an hour, and they have a TEFL certificate.
It's interesting. I think, you know, okay, like, come back to the corrective feedback thing. I mean, I agree with you, there's no magic bullet on that, and student expectations of course come into it a lot. It doesn't surprise me you say that about Russian students. It was my limited experience teaching in Scotland, where we had a few Russian students in classes. There was a similar demand from some of them. And Neil, but what is the rule? Was a question I remember. And, you know, they explained to me.
What is the rule?
They explained to me that these were older students. that they had grown up under the Soviet education system, and it was a very much a rule-based approach to teaching languages. And it's an issue, isn't it? It's interesting that Russian, as I'm sure you know, Sebastian, I don't speak Russian, I never tried to learn Russian, but I imagine when they teach Russian as a foreign language, it's very much a rule-based, because it's there awful. Are a lot.
That's of one of the reasons why I can't find a good teacher. I just want to do the rules, and I just feel like,
yeah,
not all of them, but it's hard to find one that's a bit more breaks the mold.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you, I mean, I'll share it with you if you don't have it, but Roger Gilabert, who's been on our course helping us with one of his colleagues, wrote a paper about teaching Russian with TBLT. And he challenged Mike's, you know, Mike Long's position has always been, you know, task complexity, for example, is not about linguistic complexity. It's about cognitive complexity, and we vary tasks according to how cognitively challenging they are. And the response from people teaching Russian is, well, the two things are inextricable. You can't do certain things with Russian until you've learned certain cases. So they did a paper on that, designing a series of tasks which combined this, I suppose, the idea of linguistic complexity and cognitive complexity. So maybe that would be interesting to you.
Yeah.
Because what's the word they used? Morphologically complex languages, like Russian, I imagine, like a lot of Slavic languages, like Greek, maybe.
They have a lot of inflections.
Yeah.
They have a lot of inflections.
A lot of inflections, a lot of cases. That's an interesting area for TBLT, I think, because it would challenge some of these preconceptions that you can just pick things up through use, and maybe you can't. I don't know. I tried to learn Greek, so but that was very much a rule-based approach. So it's definitely an interesting question. What I'm interested in, because the two of you have both done this Scott Thornbury dogma course, I think, you know, there are a lot of interesting connections between dogma and TBLT, but at least as far as long search and TBLT is concerned, it's far more programmatic. There's far more work involved at the beginning, whereas dogma is purely reactive, at least as I understand it. Maybe you can correct me. And it's about what comes up. And I love dogma. I'm not criticizing that at all. But I'm wondering if this makes dogma the easier approach to sell to teachers, as something an individual teacher can pick up and work with, whereas TBLT, at least here we're promoting it, is going to require more than just individual teachers, I think. It's going to require groups of teachers working together, institutions, support, time, money. What do you think? Carol, maybe you can...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I took the Scott Thornbury course alongside this while I was doing this as well.
Oh, did you do the same one as me?
Not at the same time. I think I did the one in November, I think it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you know, I have a lot of experience of dogma approach, and like I knew a lot about it, so it was just a nice opportunity to refresh my mind, and it was really useful to do alongside this course, because you know, things you've been saying, Neil, about doing TBLT on the fly and sort of like a dogma approach, and then you find a task to do, dogma seems to do that as well, like through conversation they find out what people need to do. So it's exactly the same in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then tasks will be developed, or we'll find ways to do what people need to do. And like, I'm in Scotland as well, so it is very much a task focused way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
What I think is really interesting from TBLT and this programmatic approach is that that can give support to teachers, so that teachers, like sometimes things would come up in a session, but I wouldn't have the time to go and do the research that is needed to do something. So I think it's a really good mix. If teachers can be able to do both of them, so and develop materials over time, you know, particularly in areas like Scotland, where the things that they have to do will be similar across, you know, across the country. This dogma approach and TBLT gives a wee bit of structure, you know, so... The dogma, I think, allows... I don't know. It allows that space for people to, just direct the conversations in ways they want and express themselves. And from what I understand, like the ways of corrective feedback and recasting, that's always been most effective for me in a dogma approach. And people pick it up. You know, you can notice people picking up when you've recast and using it then later on. So I think the techniques and the ways of working with people once they're using the language are similar for both approaches. And I think the TBLT is just, I think bringing them together would be the perfect partnership, you know.
Well, that's certainly how I work.
Scott, the same question. Sorry.
No, go on, Sebastian.
No, I asked Neil the same question that Chloe just said. Carol.
Okay.
Sorry, my glasses, I'm seeing sea. I asked him, how can we integrate dogma moments into a TBLT approach? Scott pretty much said, you can integrate anything into anything. It depends on how you deliver it and what your outcome is. Basically, what I see the main difference is TBLT is a more focused approach on getting the goals from beginning to end, and everything is building up on pedagogic tasks to a task assessment at the end. Whereas dogma is fantastic for experienced teachers who have a lot of great knowledge on language and lexis, phonology and grammar and so forth. And it's good to get away from a structured approach to just teach English as it is without any goal. And I remember one student, he compared teaching a dogma lesson as a game of chess, knowing that you know the opening move, but you don't know how it's going to end up. Yet you have all these skills and strategies there on how to win a game, how to convey meaning, how to get someone acquiring things, but you don't know how you're going to get there. And that's one of the exciting things I like about dogma is you might have an interesting thing, but you don't know where it's going to take you.
Yeah.
But if a student wants a focused goal, or maybe a dogma lesson is not exactly the right thing, if they want to become better communicators in an IT field, they would need more prescriptive tasks to get there.
So, well, exactly, Dogma is not going to meet these very specific needs, I don't think, unless you happen to have a teacher who's both experienced, as you say, with teaching language, but also in the particular field, because that's where they need this institutional backing. As Carol says, the support, perhaps a course that's been written with that in mind. What concerns me about dogma, and I agree with you that I find it very enjoyable, and I've taught a lot of courses in private schools here in Spain where I was supposed to follow a course book, and I pretty much agreed with the students at the beginning to say, okay, if you want some homework from it occasionally, I'll give it to you. I don't want you to waste your money, you know. But we did dogma. And maybe it's just me, or maybe it's a feature of dogma, and I think possibly both. What I found was the lack of focus at times meant there wasn't a narrow enough look at language in any given lesson. So the riffing, if you like, of what comes up in class. In some cases, you might end up listening to, I remember one, we ended up listening to Johnny Cash, A Boy Named Sue. don't ask me how that got, it wasn't even a lesson about gender diversity or divergence or whatever, but I can't remember how it came up. But we listened to Johnny Cash, A Boy Named Sue, and we worked on that, and they enjoyed it tremendously. And in that case, of course, the text that was chosen gives you that narrow enough focus that maybe you get enough repetition of certain lexis that it becomes, you know, things become more learnable, if you like. The other extreme of that, I think, it was, you know, when it was genuinely spontaneously going with what comes up, you end up with such a variety of stuff that I think less of it sticks. So I don't know if that's something that Scott talks about on his course. How do you rein it in? How do you make it, how do you give dogma that kind of focus that I think naturally comes with TBLT because you decided to work on a certain kind of task? Yeah. Did that come up at all?
I think,
it did. I just can't figure it out what session it was.
I kind of remember that being a problem that Scott brought up as well, that maybe lack of structure. And he didn't have an answer for that. So I think that is something, that's how I remember it. I don't know if that's...
Yeah.
I mean, he would have known more than me. But basically, when you're doing focus on form, you have to keep in mind your mental notebook on what's coming up in class and see what areas. But I guess when you have a class of students, everyone has saying different things. So like you said, Neil, you don't know which to focus on. And one student's probably picking it up more because they like that. And then the other students are like going right over their heads. I see there's, you can still, without being doing the dogma so fundamentally, you can just use those dogma moments and then rein it back in into the goals that you're trying to focus on, whether it's a listening preparation task for an IELTS exam, or where it's a learn how to communicate with another business partner, how to give a presentation. You know, the dogma moments, because I know that a lot of communication that comes up in TBLT courses or TBLT programs that we give to our learners, there's a lot of spontaneous discussion. Mm-hmm. It's not all do the task step by step and there you go. There's a lot of spontaneity going on.
Yeah.
And I guess dogma can help people manage those spontaneous communication moments where emergent language comes out, you got to correct the feedback, you got to focus on the form and get them. But I think, yeah.
Just one thing I'm thinking about is that dogma is learning through using language, you know, so it is, people are expressing what they want to express, they are using language in conversation, which is what I see as underpinning TBLT. So it's just, you know, they're entering into discussions, sharing stories, asking questions and all that kind of thing. And I have found that the language that comes up through people doing that is what sticks, because people want to remember how to say their stories, or people want to remember how to make their arguments.
Right.
So it does seem to be quite an effective way through using it, you know, so it does feel. And then what I would do using a dogma approach, which is something that I think you don't recommend in TBLT, is that focus on language at the end. So pick up the language book we've done and repeat and ask people to recall how they said things and build on and bring it back.
Right. I think Jeff's trying to join us back.
Hello?
Hello.
Jeff, is it? Hello? Turn on your camera, Jeff. Are you actually presentable?
Well, no, but I never am.
These academics.
It says here, detener video, as if my video was on. So,
is there something covering your video?
Detener means stopping.
Someone's... Okay.
Oh, you got a haircut.
Look at you.
Hi, how are you all? Hello, Carol. Nice to see you. Nice to see you, Sebastian. But I haven't seen Carol for a while.
No, it has been a while.
We were just slagging Dogman.
No, we weren't.
I'm kidding. I'm joking.
What were you doing, slagging Dogman?
No, we were comparing because both Sebastian and Carol have done
Australian in this era.
I
we never compliment anyone in Australia. We're always putting each other down.
Yeah, no, that sounds like Scotland.
From the Scottish
and Irish perspective. I'll join the Dogme slagging and if Carol's very, very upset by it.
No.
Are you a big fan, Carol?
Yeah, well, I mean, but I was just saying it works really alongside TBL.
Yeah, of course. I have to say, I think there's it's great. A lot of it. I mean, I like his view of course books, and I think it was a very brave and very, you know, considering when he wrote that first little sketch of he recently said to me on a I asked him if he'd help me with the last chapter of the book that we're trying to finish with Mike Long after his passing. And he says that Dogme's experiencing a real renaissance. He's very, very optimistic. There's been a tremendous response in the last, well, I think since lockdown, really. I think people have found it really a useful way of doing online stuff. Mm-hmm. But in any case, generally, he says he's very, very optimistic, which he... It was always kind of, it's such a juggernaut, the course book driven ELT, there's such huge money behind it. It is such a kind of interlocking thing of exams and ease of use and the CEFR scale, and it all knits so well together that trying to break the hegemony of that, you know, that kind of a seven-level idea of proficiency-rated EFL. He said, always said, Dogme hasn't got a snowball's chance in hell kind of thing. You know, it's just too small. It'll never be more than a kind of interesting little niche. And I must say, Mike Long was always fairly pessimistic about TBT from that point of at least a strong version like his, you know. He said you can't really expect that kind of program to bust open the hold of the publishers and the examination boards and the rest of the stuff. You can expect it to work quite well in a situation like in Maryland where he had a team of very key students doing postgraduate work and a big budget too, you know, and lots more interesting clients. So when you get all those three together, you get a tremendous opportunity for his kind of TBLT, but rather like Scott was saying, compare that to the situation that most teachers and in a place where there are 10 million, apparently, or more than 10 million people teaching English as a foreign language, to really expect Dogme or a strong TBLT to make a significant kind of dent in the hold that you know what we're complaining about has on it. I don't know. You know, I've always thought, well, I reckon it can. I reckon it's time. I think more and more people are challenging the course book kind of the efficacy. It's just a question of efficacy. It doesn't bloody work, you know. Mm-hmm. So many people just don't, you know, fail. Mm-hmm. And what's more, I think the kind of archetypal, you know, 15 people in a classroom doing a course of 80 or 90 hours and going on to the next one, I think that's kind of collapsing. I think there is far more variety now. You know, it's one-to-one. There's in company. There's so much room now for a more tailor-made, you know, rather than the sort of one-size-fits-all approach, that I think that TBLT and Dogme both do have a chance of making a really significant impact.
Yeah.
I think it needs to come in before people are trained. I think, and that's something I mentioned in the course with Scott, is that the training gets in the way. Like, I've worked with like community workers who have no ESOL or no ELT training, and the way they work with people is more of a sort of a naturally Dogme approach. They engage in conversation and then they help with the language just naturally from that point of view. And because they don't know anything about the grammar, they can't focus on that, but it is still quite effective.
If I can, I'd like maybe a question for Jeff. One of the things that we were talking about, how TBLT is very focused approach, and Dogme is sort of let's see how it ends up at the end of the lesson. There's no real, although you can rein it in to us. Got to be a very good teacher to do that. One of my biggest failings as a teacher, my weakness is corrective feedback and how to. You can have a conversation-driven lesson with great materials and preparation. And I often find that some students prefer the explicit explanation or the recasts. And if you're in a class with a mix, to get that right balance. Because I could recast many things, and I notice my students don't up on it. They don't notice it, and they write, and I'm going to have to stop the lesson. Right, this is how you do your grammar point and form. Well, you get it through your head now. and like I said, it's hard to get that magic bullet. But you're right. I mean, if we focus too much on form and explicit, the communication goes out the window. It becomes like a synthetic, inauthentic conversation or learning process. It's just like, I think Neil was saying, it's like, how do you get that balance of...
Yes, it is. It's it's almost the Philosopher's Stone, isn't it, that one? Yeah. I agree. I think, first, you see, Long would say, at least if you're doing trying to say, then that in itself gives more chance that that's kind of where they are. I mean, the whole point is something to do with the learnability and all that. But there is not that it's a terribly well did, but there is a natural sort of order of acquisition. You're wasting your time if you try and teach people things that they're just not ready for. So that's one point. And Long's, that's why he quite rationally, I think, says, if you get people talking, then what they're trying to say and the way they try to say it is more likely to be in line with where they are in their inter-language development. So that in itself, rather than walk in and say, well, it's Tuesday, so it must be time to do the second conditional, which says you haven't got there's no chance at all that that will correspond to where they're in a state where they'll learn it. At least if you are talking, then see a more, likely moment for them to learn to notice. Now, of course, you're quite right. often every indication of not noticing at all, of completely ignoring your corrective feedback because they're interested in meaning and they're more interested in saying what they want to say. And you say, so they went. So the first thing is, I think we can, as usual, it's easier to say what's wrong than to say what's right. So I think we can fairly easily dismiss a synthetic grammar-based syllabus that says on day one we will do the present tense and we'll go, and then on day 10 this or on day. Now that seems to me completely, you know, there is no justification for doing that and very little chance that people will learn what you teach them. On the other hand, if you say, as Scott does in as Meddings and Thornbury do in Dogme, what we'll do is we'll talk about what they want to talk about, and because of their interest in it, then we'll pick up on problems that they have been saying it. Now that seems to me pretty, you know, reasonable. The question then is, and what Scott and also Luke Meddings say, is that there is every reason, there's nothing wrong with, for example, taking notes and having a session afterwards, so saying, okay, or videoing it, for example, or recording it, and then going back and saying, well, let's have a look at this. Interesting here, when you were trying to talk about your family's experiences, you rather kind of felt proper, and that might be because you didn't have the vocabulary, or it's also you seem to be confusing I've gone with I went. And then you actually do 10 minutes, or I mean, what you don't do is base a lesson on it and slam it over, and then, or maybe you do, but you know, that's the kind of question. So it seems to me that really the question is first, to abandon a grammar-based synthetic syllabus. So let's ditch that one and then think, okay, how can we... Now, Long would say the trouble with Dogme is that the students themselves don't know what's best for them. Basically, that's what he's saying. And very often, teachers don't either. Who really know are the domain experts, and those are the people you should talk to, and that's where you should get. So Long is concerned with the kind of language that people need. That's what, you know, what do they want to do with it? And that's the basis of the TBLT and the fact that it's task driven. It's not a normal needs analysis, you know. So that's the point. He would say, if you start with that, then you're the most likely is that the kind of language they use, whether or not to accept Robinson's thing, which I think we all think is a bit difficult to define, the complexity and so on. And there's another interesting thing we could talk about is the CAF analysis, the complexity, accuracy, and fluency. But in any case, once you're in there, then you might say, okay, now Long is very keen on reading, as you've read in his book, some very strong evidence to support him. My experience tells me otherwise. Well, I've rather always been rather skeptical of recasts. And I've always thought, and especially, of course, because of face value, that there is a good reason to actually give some feedback in terms of not exactly wait a minute, let's have a look at it. But certainly, well, look, you were really... problems there, and you know, here's what where you were going. Or I think we should talk about this, you know. So I would say, and Willis and Skian would certainly say too, there is a real place for explicit grammar and lexical, of course, work, and Skian and Willis both agree that the place for that is a sort of post-task feedback session. That when I was doing immersion courses myself at home, I let them go. I didn't, I just took notes. And I mean, I'd occasionally do a bit of recasting or certainly a bit of help with the vocabulary, you know, if they got stuck, you supply the words and so on, and you keep them going. But I would take notes and then I would have a little go at the end of that particular riff, as it were, you know, if they were talking for 10 minutes or we were doing something for 10 minutes, have a little. But what the other thing I would do would take, I would get up early, this is an immersion course, they go to bed at 12 o'clock, half drunk like the rest of us, and wake up in the morning, and I would do, write up the notes. And the first session after breakfast, I would go over what we did the previous day. Now, I did that partly, I confess, for face value, because I knew they thought, aha, this guy, I'm in safe hands, rather than as much belief as most teachers seem to have in the value of that kind of thing. But at least I did it, and I do think it does have some value. So that's, in short, I totally agree. A really, really key question is, what kind of attention do we give to formal aspects of the language, and how do we do it, and when's the best place to do it?
Mm-hmm. Can I just come in there? I mean, I think, Carol, you mentioned earlier that we frown upon this post-communicative event language focus. But as Jeff points out, in several versions of TBLT, it's explicitly encouraged. Jane Willis, especially in the Jane Willis framework, the post-task language focus is very similar to what Jeff mentioned with dogma of perhaps, you know, analyzing a transcript of what took place or what should have taken place if you're using a transcript of the ideal model of the task or whatever and thinking about differences. So I don't think we shouldn't be making explicit injunctions against doing that. I'm suspicious of it, though, and I'll just tell you why. I mean, okay, understand that face value, and I'm not saying recasts are the magic bullet either, because I probably agree with Jeff that we need to be a little bit skeptical. I think with recasts, we can't be sure that evidence that it's not explicitly taken up at that moment or it's not acknowledged doesn't mean it hasn't had some impact. And that impact might come out later. What my worry is about the lack of focus or the lack of narrowness, if you like, in the terms of the language we look at. And okay, so in a dogma lesson, you might end up with a whole bunch of lexis and bits of grammar, and then you're going to do a post-task, a post-communicative event, if you like, focus on some of these. I guess you have to be selective. Then what do you do with them next? Jeff says, okay, next day, you know, next class, you go over them again. I know teachers, and I've done this a lot as well, who'll make up Quizlet sets or flashcard sets of things that have come up. This ever-expanding Quizlet is generated that students are encouraged to work on. And I'm more and more skeptical and suspicious that that doesn't work. First of all, students don't. I think teachers think Quizlet is much more exciting than students do. They hope their students would spend time on the bus or on the way to school on the train looking at their Quizlet set. But I think only the most dedicated of them actually do that. And I think the rest of them do the same as us and play Candy Crush or Minecraft or whatever on, you know what I mean? So there's that element of it. That requires a lot of student and motivation. Secondly, it's very bitty, and it gets back into this synthetic idea that we'd learn bits of the language, even if those bits have come out of communicative events. And, you know, so what I'm tending more towards the idea of this repeating, I suppose, in a way, interspersing similar tasks throughout a syllabus, coming back to the same task that you've got, so that there's this natural, I suppose, exposure to a tighter kind of set of language and discourse needed to do things, you know? And I think that's what's lacking in dogma. And maybe Scott's responded to this, but my feeling is it's lovely to work with stuff that comes up, and we're always going to want to do that. But if that's all we do, then a lot of the stuff that comes up is going to disappear off into the ether. As Carol says, you know, the stuff that's really relevant to students, that helps them express what they want to express or do what they want to do, that's going to stick a lot quicker, a lot better. But dogma, I think, is more, if you like, is more a response to how language classes are normally run. General English, students are not grouped according to needs. Students take it for no obvious reason. Dogma is a great response to that. But that natural mix of needs in a class is going to mean a big dispersed, you know, a big variety of things that come up that are not going to be relevant to everybody. And I think that's the argument for TBLT. And I, you know, I agree with you, but the way I think the two of them can be combined is where you simply don't have the time and resources to program a full TBLT course. But what you can program, you intersperse with dogma. That's my position. So my worry about corrective feedback is that, is this delayed stuff? I think it's useful up to a point, but it needs more than just, you know, a post-task language focus. It's when do we focus on that stuff again? And I would say that having similar tasks throughout a syllabus, which would involve a kind of coming back to this, these same areas, is what's needed. And that, I think, requires more programming.
I have a question. It was mentioned, this journal article by Martin Bygay, written in 2020. I don't know if you've read, I've only read the extract. I haven't read the full article. The title is Some Directions for the Possible Survival of TBLT as a Real
World
Project.
Yeah, we've put it as a text for this session.
You did. Yeah. You did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's in this session?
Yeah, in the reading, I think.
In the wrap-up session or the...
In the wrap-up, yeah. In the wrap-up reading, I think.
Okay, got you.
I meant to
I'll have a look at that.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I wrote it down. What are your thoughts on that? Now that you're here, I'll read it. What are your thoughts about it? Is it good or bad or indifferent?
I think personally, I mean, Jeff, you can say what he thinks. I just very quickly, I think he's absolutely right in that when he talks about TBLT is a researched pedagogy, and the big problem is bridging the gap between the research and the pedagogy. And I think the problem with TBLT for me at the moment is that it's not always bridging that gap. And there's a lot of research. I mean, I think possibly is it the most researched methodology in SLA or in ISLA? It seems to me that it probably is.
Yes, it is by a country mile.
By a country mile. That is not reflected in how it's adopted in the practice of language teaching throughout the world, not by a country mile either. You know, the two things are not matching up. So insofar as Bygate says, we need to engage with, focus more on the pedagogy side of it. I think he's absolutely right. I don't know, Jeff, what you think.
Yes, I quite agree. I think it's an interesting article. I like Bygate's approach. First, he's easy to read, which is refreshing. And second, I think he's critically quite on the ball. I think he sort of, it's a bit too academic-y in that he doesn't seem to see, you know, the stuff in Long that I like so much is precisely the pedagogic stuff. I think Long is really good at getting down and dirty with, you know, with the stuff. And Bygate tends to sort of drift above it a bit. And a bit, you know, maybe that's not terribly fair, but I take his point exactly as Neil says. It is still a research methodology. It's a sort of thing that someone well-financed and well thought of and so on, like Long, can do. And he'll get accolades and get people here like Roger in Barcelona and other people all over the place doing replications and doing tremendous stuff. And I think Bygate's point is that's a hell of a long way from most people's experience at LEFL, and I completely agree. And I think he makes some very good points about why that's the case. but I don't think he really has such a good hold on Long's very well thought through process of developing a TBLT course. And you know, its essential points being very different from the kind of thing that Rod Ellis or Noonan or the Ellises or the Willises or any even Skian is much closer actually to the Willises. And although I think Skian as a SLA, the studies that he's done avoid all the problems of Robinson's because it's deliberately more modest in its aims. It's far more, let's tweak this and see what happens, than trying to test a rather shaky set of constructs that Robinson uses. So I think that's what I would say about Begay. I don't think Bygate really appreciates the full import of Long's development of TBLT. There's one thing I'd like to say and I completely agree. One of the things I like most about Long's TBLT is precisely the built-in repetition that happens. One of the greatest things about the development of the sequence of pedagogic tasks, rather than, as I always said to Mike, because I don't know why you keep banging on about Robinson's stuff so much, which is, you know, rather kind of iffy. What's really so good is the idea that you start off with a basic version and you build it up. And that's really the principle behind the sequencing of pedagogic tasks is increased complexity in a perfectly common sense point of view without getting into all the stuff that Robinson does. So if you start out, you know, take the classic example of the person on the air steward saying tea or coffee and ending up having to try and apologize for something that went wrong and offer an alternative. Now that seems and as he says himself in whatever chapter it is in the book, the "would you like" starts off with "would you like tea or coffee" and ends up in the most, you know, the complicated version. You know, in the course of that sequence, there are various sequences of formal elements of the language that get repeated and repeated and repeated, and not just repeated, but rephrased and reformulated in more complicated ways. Now, that seems to me a tremendously powerful argument in its favor, precisely as I could agree. If you say somebody the next day, now remember, yesterday you said, it is 6 years that I live in Barcelona, and we all know it should be, I have lived in Barcelona. Yes, I too doubt how effective that is. So, and I also agree completely with Neil that it's much more efficacious, you know, that word again, to build in revision, to build in repetition, to keep coming back, revisiting it. Don't think, done that, been there. You know, and that nonsense.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. As for Bygate, I agree mostly with Neil.
Well, can I just turn this round? We've very limited time, but put it back to Sebastian and Carol. Bygate's, I think, accurate diagnosis is that the gap between research and practice has not been bridged satisfactorily. What we're trying to do here, I suppose, is an attempt to do that. So what we would like is if people who've done this course feel ready, if they're given the time and resources in some kind of, you know, position or semi-managerial position or director of studies type position in a school or running business English programs or running ESOL programs, would you feel now ready to design and implement a TBLT course? Or what more would you need? Briefly, because I need to switch it over. Sorry to put you on the spot, but... would you be able to, and would you in that sense, are we bridging the gap?
So just very quickly, because I haven't finished the course yet, but yeah, I think I would. what I would like would be people to just talk things through with, who have a similar understanding. So as you're developing materials or developing tasks out of actual language use or certain scenarios, as people to say, okay, this is what I'm thinking about doing, and then, you know, just talk that through. I think that would be useful. So that community, to bounce things off, really, that understand, that have the same perspective, would be useful.
I do. I would prefer to do a implement a course with a colleague, actually, because I know there's a lot of heavy lifting involved, which goes on to my next set. I know you're very short of time, 2 minutes. I think one of the issues with TBLT, why there's so much research but it hasn't caught on, it's hard to sell. It's hard to make a business out of it. And I think we can, if we're able to combine technology in a platform that can automate a lot of that heavy lifting for us, and we can sell a solution, you know, if we're doing through a cooperative or through a business idea, we can actually do that if we're a TBLT specialist and actually earn a proper salary with all this heavy research and heavy lifting we're doing, you know?
Yeah, because that's where some of the money might be, is in the development of the tasks and the materials and things like that. That's what might get funded and things like that, in particular in places like Scotland.
Exactly. And also, I think, you know, in terms of business clients, Sebastian, and let's keep this conversation open, because I'd like to continue talking to you about this. But as well, it's to say to a company client, it said, look, you would be paying X amount for X hours of classes in a year. What if you sacrificed in the first year 20 hours of that course that we could spend on doing a needs analysis, for example? You pay the same. You get a little less teaching over the year, but the teaching you do get will be far more focused. You know, I think there are ways, and it's a, as you say, it's a pitch that we have to learn to make better. And it's something at the co-op that we're trying to do, but I certainly think it's possible. And as you say, you're talking about niches before, unique selling points. You know, not that I like to commodify everything, but when it comes down to it, that's the kind of language people understand.
No, but we want to be paid reasonably well for all that work we do.
Exactly. And as Carol knows, in public context, they speak the same language these days. Unfortunately, but that's it. Listen, I'm really sorry, because I should have given one link for both of these chats, because then people could just join in this one, and then those of you who can't stay,
I'm happy to join in.
What's happening? You've got
I'll have to stop this one and click on the other. But listen,
it's really nice to talk to you both, and I quite agree, Sebastian. A quick parting shot. Yes, I totally agree that TBLT can be marketed. Someone like Neil, because I'm far too old, but someone, you know, like that, the first step would be a good materials bank. That seems to me to be, you know, would really help with the heavy lifting, as you call it. Anyway, really nice to talk to you, see you both. Lots of love, Carol. Okay. Good luck to you, and I'll see you on Twitter or somewhere.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, Sebastian.
The forum's still open, so hope to see some of your contributions.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay. Come on, Neil. Are we going to the other one now?
Yes, I'm going to shut this down and open the other link, all right? So I'll see you there. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.